Good morning, counsel. Have a seat at the table. As you're getting set up, I'll call the next case. It's A240606 in the matter of the welfare of NKD child. Counsel, you're familiar with our proceedings. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and the appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. I understand we have a certified student attorney today representing the appellant. Welcome, thank you. And we've signed an order allowing that argument to proceed. These matters are being recorded. That is the only recording that is permitted. We do have a little bit of a delay with the timer. So when you approach the podium, we'll start the timer. And when the beeping stops, you're ready to go. And we're ready whenever you are. You'll probably just get the camera. Start the clock.
Okay. Take a deep breath.
Anytime you're ready, counsel.
May it please the court. I am Anna Kidman. I am a law student practitioner under the supervision of Sarah Martin, and I am representing NKD. We raised two issues on appeal, but today I would like to focus on the first issue, in which we argue that the state failed to present sufficient evidence to prove that an emergency existed at the time the call was placed. It's not uncommon for people to call 911 when an emergency does not exist. People call because of misunderstandings or because they're making something up or because they just don't know what else to do. However, the definition of emergency is a serious situation or occurrence that happens unexpectedly and demands immediate action or a condition of urgent need for action or assistance. The situation on November 6, 2022 was not an emergency. My client, NKD, who was only 14 years old and weighed 95 pounds at the time, explained to the arriving officer that he had been arguing with his 12-year-old sister about letting the dog out. A simple argument between siblings.
Sir, how old was the sister?
The sister was 12 years old, the sister who he said he was arguing with.
Which sister called?
The 19-year-old sister, ND, who testified at trial, was the one who called 911.
Thank you.
The district court relied on three facts to establish that an emergency existed. Those facts include one, that ND made the 911 call in response to a heated argument. Number two, that more than one 911 call was made. And number three, that NKD's mother was not home at the time of the incident.
Didn't the district court also rely? I mean, one of the district court's findings is that the argument escalated to the point, and the quote that the district court says is where someone needed to call 911. So when someone needs to call 911, isn't that indicative of an emergency situation?
So the testimony where that came out was actually kind of a leading question from the state. It was, did the argument escalate to the point where you felt you needed to call 911? And she said yes.
That was the district court's finding. So the district court credited that evidence, which is supported by the record, and we don't disturb that on appeal.
Yes, we agree. We're not disputing the district court's factual findings here. However, the case law doesn't suggest that somebody's that a caller's belief that an emergency exists is enough to establish an emergency. And I think that we see that in Hersey, where the 911 call itself doesn't make the emergency.
But does the district court's conclusion that there was a need to call 911, is that the same as someone's belief that they should call 911? Or is there a distinction there that can be drawn?
Well, I don't think that the district court pointed to any reason why they needed to call 911. We don't have any testimony from ND as to why the call was made. Why the call was needed, yes. So, an emergency requires urgent need for action or assistance, and we don't have any facts here that tell us what kind of action or assistance she wanted or felt that she needed.
Is this an objective or subjective standard?
This is an objective standard.
That'd be right. So, objectively, you're saying there was an argument, it was heated, but we don't have the factors that would indicate an emergency because there was no threats of violence There was no get out of the house or I'm going to kill you, anything like that. It was just two teenagers arguing. And I guess the 19-year-old sister couldn't deal with them. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. And we, you know, the state didn't prove what heated meant either. You know, I think that the district court did rely on the fact that the argument was heated, and that's what ND testified to. But without knowing additional facts and what ND meant when she said heated, we can't assume that that means that there was an emergency. In contrast,
you think heated means loud?
It may, but I don't think that it's our place to speculate that. And I think that even if you did want to infer that it was a loud argument, I think that a loud argument between a 12 and 14 year old is probably not
every day.
Yes, I would agree.
At least it did with my then 12 and 14 year old children.
Yes, and that is definitely our position. In the other case,
as I understand your argument on appeal here, you're only challenging element as to whether or not there was an emergency.
Yes, Your Honor.
And going back to Judge Frisch's question, which I think is a really good question, why is the district court's finding in paragraph 15 not sufficient to meet the definition of an emergency? Basically, says it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt, and then says relies principally on this finding that Ms. Deng testified an argument among siblings escalated to the point that she needed to call 911, and that mother was not home at the time of the incident. Multiple phone calls were made to 911 that evening regarding the incident at the apartment.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I do believe I understand your question. So the reason why we are saying that that is not an emergency is we're not disputing the facts that the district court found. However, the case law says pretty clearly that a 911 call doesn't make an emergency, and therefore more than one 911 call does not make more of an emergency. 0 + 0 is still 0. If a 911 call did transform the situation into an emergency, the legislature wouldn't have written a separate element into the definition of emergency call. Furthermore, the state didn't present any information about, what was involved in any more calls than the one that ND admitted making. She said she doesn't remember making more than one call. So the state didn't prove to us, they didn't present evidence who made those calls or what those calls were about, or if there was more than one additional call. So we're saying that we're not disputing that there were multiple calls made, but we are disputing that it is relevant to the issue.
If I could just state it a different way, if I understand your argument correctly, it's that a finding that someone believed they needed to make an emergency call does not necessarily equate to proof that an emergency existed. Is that the argument?
Absolutely. And I think that's what case law says. I think that case law tells us that, in each case, the courts have made pretty extensive findings on what led them to conclude there was an emergency. And those include things like, a physical fight between the parties, or an argument that continues despite a victim's request to leave, a victim reporting they're fearful, parties throwing objects at each other, and third parties having to intervene. These are just some of the things, but no same or similar things happened here.
Go ahead.
And simply, because the district court's finding is that Ms. Deng testified that the argument escalated to a point that she called 911. So that's her subjective belief.
It is.
That is what you're arguing. Is that because that's subjective, it doesn't meet the objective standard?
Right. I am arguing that there needs to be more.
Exactly.
There needs to be more. I think the only thing that goes toward an emergency here is the fact that there was a heated emergency, or I'm sorry, a heated argument. I think that that starts to get us in the direction of wondering if there's an emergency. But I think that according to the case law, you need more than an argument, because we have case law that says that a simple argument is not an emergency. And without knowing what heated means, we can't say it's more.
Can I just, want to rewind this back to our standard of review. And I think that we're dealing with circumstantial evidence and not direct evidence of the existence of an emergency. So I take it that your argument is also that there's more than one reasonable inference from the evidence that's presented. Her calling 911, maybe there was an emergency, but her calling 911 is, well, maybe there was a disorderly conduct going on or some other heated argument going on. Is that also your argument?
You know, I think that that would be, it would be accurate to frame it in that way, saying that there was, you know, if we are trying to exclude all the other possibilities here, I don't think you can exclude the idea that innocent conduct was happening here. I think that it is very possible and it is very likely here that based on the evidence we have and the state that the evidence that the district court credited, I think that what it tells us is that this was just an argument between siblings and it wasn't an emergency.
Does the record indicate about how long this argument went on for?
No, it does not. I'd like to address the fact that...
Before we move on, do you agree that there we can apply the circumstantial evidence?
I think that that would be appropriate in this case.
Thank you.
Finally, I'd like to address the fact that the lower court brought up that NKD's mother was not home at the time of the incident. I think that while true, is not relevant to the situation and to the situation being an emergency. And that is because NKD and his younger sister were not unsupervised at the time that this occurred. They were supervised by their 19 and 20-year-old older sisters. So they not only, it's not as if they had a babysitter who was a bit older, they had two adults watching them who were familiar with them. So we would say that
wouldn't that cut against your argument? Because if you have two adults and they can't control the argument, wouldn't that suggest it was an emergency and that 911 had to be called?
You know, I think that that's a pretty big leap in reasoning. I think that it's just as reasonable to say that the sister, you know, this was an argument just like any other, and the sister just said, let's call 911 this time.
She didn't want to deal with it.
Exactly. I mean, I think that both of those are, you know, are leaps we don't have to make. But I think that if you're asking the question, you know, that's just as reasonable in this situation.
Counsel, is there some unsettled area of law that you need us to clarify in this case?
I don't believe so. We have, there are, as far as I can tell, there are four cases that address sufficiency of emergency. I believe the state referenced a fifth case, State v. Roach, but I have two reasons why I believe that that's not relevant to this case, because they didn't discuss the sufficiency of the emergency and because it occurred before Hersey, which Hersey was the first time where this court kind of established that an emergency is a separate element that must be proved. So I would say Roach is not relevant here. I think that the other case law just gives us really good examples of what is and what isn't an emergency. And it basically summed up, you know, Barthel says that it's not an emergency to have a simple argument, whereas Brandis and Eskew say that, you know, an argument with additional facts, such as a physical fight, something that's serious, out of the ordinary, you know, something that really demands a third party intervention, something where parties are hurting each other, I think that those are all emergencies. But what we have in this case is more similar to the case in Barthel, where it was a simple argument and the state did not prove that it was any more than that.
Ms. Kidman, what if the sentence in paragraph 15 that we're all looking at, this edition, Deng testified an argument among the siblings escalated to the point that she needed to call 911 because the brother said he would kill the sister. Enough for an emergency?
I think that that would be a more difficult case for the defense.
That's an understatement.
Yes. I think that, you know, we still have the idea of the ages. And I think without more evidence that there was actually intent to do harm, I think that it might still be up for interpretation, but absolutely. I think that if there were any real threats, you know, we probably wouldn't be making the argument that an emergency didn't exist.
Thank you.
Well, if there are no more
questions. Feel free to quit while you're ahead.
Thank you. Well, in conclusion, it was the state's burden to tell us a story that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that what happened was an emergency, but it failed to do so. The only thing the state's evidence proves is that the siblings were having an argument. An argument is not an emergency. For those reasons, we are asking this court to reverse the order adjudicating NKD delinquent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kidman. You will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Counsel? I'll just ask that you come on up and we'll reset the clock here for you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jonathan Jansen. I'm an assistant Blue Earth County attorney representing the respondent state of Minnesota in this case. The state's argument is that the evidence presented to the district court was sufficient for the district court to determine that an emergency existed at the time that appellant interfered with the victim's multiple attempts to call 911 in response to an heated argument.
There needs to be an emergency before the 911 call happens, or at least at the time of the 911.
We would agree that I believe the standard is that an emergency exists at the time that the 911 call is placed and that that the interference happens.
So simply interfering with a 911 call is not sufficient. We'd agree with that.
Absent in a full or broader examination of the facts surrounding the 911 call, I would agree with that.
Counsel, so, what was the emergency? I mean, it's not clear to me what it was.
Sure. The emergency, and that was part of the, I think what would help to the court is to go through all the facts that the court had before it in making its assessment that there was an emergency.
Well, all that
you relied on was testimony that the argument escalated to the point that Ms. Deng needed to call 911. The court did not find any other facts to support its determination that there was an emergency other than that, and that the mother was not home and multiple phone calls were made. But it seems the court's primary, my reading of this is the primary focus is that the argument escalated to the point that Ms. Deng needed to call 911. So how is paragraph 15, how are those findings sufficient to show an emergency?
Sure, so two things. One is that, the state reads the court's order that specifically the first element that the court pointed out to include an analysis of the factors and the facts that the court could take in looking at the evidence in whole to determine that when the court says that the argument among the siblings escalated to the point where that escalation is what really the court was looking at. And then second of all, looking at the third element that the court actually pointed out there, that multiple phone calls were made to 911 regarding the incident, appellant would like to point to the fact that it's multiple phone calls and say, well, that's not enough.
So all the things that you're describing are responses to something that happened. What is that something? That's the emergency, right? And I mean, I am troubled by the fact that you are not telling us what the emergency is.
Sure. The emergency was that the caller reported over the victim reported that the appellant had pushed her, that someone was trying to pick.
The victim reported that the appellant had pushed her when first you said the caller, then you said the victim. They're two different people, correct?
My apologies. No, they are the same person. The victim is the caller. I'm using them interchangeably in this case. I believe it was identified as ND in the record. Would be the sister, the 19-year-old sister. The report from the caller was that someone had pushed the caller, that someone was trying to kick the door in. And in fact, appellant in his statements with the officers in the body camera admitted himself that he had grabbed his sister in order to take the phone away.
Okay, so among those things, what's the emergency?
The imminent physical threat of a being pushed, the door being kicked in, and the being grabbed in order to get the phone out of her hand.
Testimony that NPD was kicking a door. There was some vague testimony about a threat of a door being kicked in, but it wasn't tied to NPD, correct?
I believe the The phone call was that someone was trying to kick the door in. Now, I guess it doesn't specify that it was NKD in specific that was trying to do that. But given the fact...
But the reason for the phone call originally was the siblings were arguing and it escalated. And then this other testimony about the door potentially being kicked in and some pushing, that wasn't tied to the original reason for the call. Is that accurate?
No, that was the original. That was what was reported to the officers.
That was going on during the call, that the officer heard that during the call. But maybe I'm
pointing to the testimony of Detective Lopez, who said on the first call, the caller reported that the appellant was causing a disturbance and had pushed her. And then the Officer Myers testified that it was also reported that the caller thought someone was trying to kick her door in. And then in the second call, that was when the first call got interrupted and disconnected. The second call, that was when it was stated that law enforcement could hear continuous arguing and yelling in the background of the call.
So among all of those things, when you cobble all of them together, in your view, that creates an immediate need to assist in ameliorating the threat of imminent harm?
I would say that those facts were sufficient for the district court to make a reasonable determination of that an emergency existed.
Okay. Yes. So you also argued in your brief that the circumstantial evidence standard of review applies. So from those facts, couldn't a reasonable fact finder also conclude that maybe it was just a disorderly conduct? Maybe it was just an argument between siblings. There wasn't anything that was of an imminent nature that required emergency personnel to intervene.
Your Honor, my apologies. I don't recall arguing that the circumstantial evidence burden.
You think this is a direct evidence case?
I think it was, because there was direct evidence from the phone call from the victim herself. And there was direct evidence from the appellant himself stating as to what he did in the situation.
But neither of them said an emergency existed. So you would have to infer from the evidence or their testimony that those circumstances amounted to an emergency. Don't you agree?
In that sense, I can see what you're saying. Yes, I think that it was within the purview, though, of the district court to make a determination based on its assessment of the facts that it saw. And
I mean, we're talking about two different things here, right? Sure. So let's pin down the standard of review. Because the testimony wasn't direct that an emergency existed, do you agree that the standard of review that we look under which we look at this evidence should be the circumstantial evidence standard of review?
I don't know if the...
And then I'll say it a different way. What's the direct evidence of an emergency?
The direct evidence would be the fact that the victim testified that the argument became escalated, and then I guess so there would be a mix of direct evidence and circumstantial evidence, I guess, then in that situation.
So if it is circumstantial evidence, at least in part, is there more than one reasonable inference to be drawn from this evidence that maybe we're dealing with a couple of angry siblings, or maybe we're dealing with a disorderly conduct and not something that's emergent in nature?
I think if you look at the case law that's been cited, I would say that there, given the fact that there was reports of kicking, of pushing, of...
That was after grabbing the phone. Let's assume that the kicking the door in was after grabbing the phone. And we look to the definition of emergency or interference with an emergency call. There has to be a call at the time, an emergency at the time the call is initiated. And let's assume the kicking happens after the call is initiated. Do we consider that? We don't even know that it's NKD who's kicking the door. It's clear that that's not identified.
I think all this, this has to be considered in the context. I don't think that when there is an emergency, it's like.
Well, what is your best argument that there was an emergency at the time the first 911 call was made?
The fact that the caller reported that the appellant had pushed her at the time. That is a showing of at least some physical contact between the parties.
And tell me what page of the transcript that is on.
Yes, I am looking at page 25 of the transcript. This would be in Detective Lopez's testimony. He testified that during the first call, the caller reported the appellant was causing a disturbance and had pushed her. And the state reads Brandis, the Brandis case, which kind of established the framework for considering whether an emergency existed. The state reads that as basically creating the edge cases. So on the one case, you have, if there is any physical violence whatsoever, 100% an emergency exists. That seems to be what Brandis is saying. On the other hand, you have, if it's just a simple argument, then in that case, no emergency exists. Everything else exists in the spectrum, and it was within the purview of.
So thank you for pointing us to that page of the transcript. So how does that testimony about coaching meet the definition of an emergency, a serious situation or occurrence that happens unexpectedly and demands immediate action?
Because it was physical contact between two parties.
So that any pushing is sufficient to constitute an emergency, even if it's a between two siblings who push each other.
I think, again, I would.
We don't know how hard the pushing was, correct?
We do not. We do not have testimony as to the exactness of the pushing, but we do have contact between the parties that was continuing on, and there were certainly indications that the situation was not resolving itself due to multiple phone calls being made.
Let's try this hypothetical. This argument ends, and we all go outside, and all the high school students go outside to get on the bus. Two of the high school students who are here start shouting at each other. And I decide, I don't want to hear this anymore. I'm calling 911. And one of those students who's shouting at each other comes up to me, takes my phone away, and hangs up. Can you charge the person who did that with interference with an emergency 911 call and convict them?
It would depend on the parameters of the shouting.
You're shouting as loud as I am right now.
I would say that in that circumstance, most likely not. But I would say that all of this is something that the district court had the closest, as the fact finder, evidence to or ability to review that evidence and make its determination.
I agree with you on that point, but my concern or where I'm struggling is paragraph 15 doesn't really do much to identify a specific emergency, at least as the way emergency is commonly defined.
And
how are the findings in paragraph 15 sufficient to show emergency?
I would say that the use of the word things like escalated, things like needed, things like multiple calls being made to 911 regarding the incident. It's almost a totality of the circumstances that the court was able to look at these, all these facts that it was given and make these determinations. And as to the specificness of the court's findings, I would just say that the court was given all of the evidence to observe and to review and made its determinations on based on that assessment.
Thank you.
Well, if there's nothing further, I'll briefly conclude. The state requests that this court, after viewing the adjudication with the proper deference to the district court's determination, find that the district court did reasonably find that an emergency existed at the time that appellant interfered with the 911 call, given the facts and legitimate inferences it could make in its purview as fact finder, and affirm this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. I do want to emphasize for the supervising teachers in the room that that was purely a hypothetical that Judge Connolly posed. I do not want to encourage any behavior that might get anyone into trouble. Ms. Kidman, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you. So I would like to briefly address a few of the state's points. I do think it's important that we consider the district's court's findings, and we consider that the district court did not consider any of these additional facts the state brings up, such as any report of pushing or the sound of maybe something.
In our review, don't we have to consider that evidence?
I think that this court defers.
Excuse me, go ahead.
I think that this court defers to the district court's findings of credibility. They're in the best position to kind of weigh the facts. And here they very clearly credited ND in her testimony. I think it's important that ND was the only person to testify, and she did not report any serious conflict. She didn't report any pushing. She didn't report anything sounding like it was trying to kick, like a door was trying to be kicked in. Furthermore, I think that the state didn't introduce any evidence really tying more than one of these calls to what was going on here. The testimony from Officer Myers was that a caller said that it sounded like someone was trying to kick a door in. But we don't have any evidence who this caller was when this call was made. Also, Officer Lopez testified that they received information that the complainant was pushed as part of why they showed up. But I think it's really telling that ND didn't say any of that when she testified. It's also notable that the court or that the state did not introduce any of the 911 calls themselves. They didn't attempt to introduce these calls, and that may have cleared some things up for us, but instead we are left wondering what happened because we didn't see the evidence of an emergency. I'd also like to point out that the state mentioned that the situation was not resolving itself. And in case law, for example, in Brandis, the officer arrived and found that the defendant was still there, still arguing. And in that case, the victim said that she didn't know what else she could do to get her son out of her house. Whereas here, I don't think it's accurate to say the situation didn't resolve itself. I think the situation did very clearly resolve itself because the siblings had separated themselves and were not arguing by the time the officers arrived. I just think that's an important point to make here when we're considering the totality of the circumstances.
You would also agree that we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict.
Yes, I do.
We defer to the district court's credibility determination, but we view the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict.
Yes.
There is evidence of some testimony of pushing, some testimony of possible. Someone was trying to kick the door in, some testimony of hitting. Why isn't that enough to support the district court's finding that there was, in fact, an emergency?
I don't remember a testimony about hitting. I do remember.
It was in the body-worn camera video.
Yes, I do recall.
I shouldn't say testimony, but the video showed some discussion of hitting.
I do remember Officer Myers on the body camera saying to NKD that your sisters are saying you hit them, which I don't think that that's evidence that this court should weigh very heavily because I don't think it's testimony. I think it's a question to NKD. I would like to just close by saying that kids squabble and sometimes kids roughhouse. And I don't think that, you know, even if we are to credit the allegations of, you know, pushing, that there was maybe some pushing between the 12 and the 14-year-olds, I don't think that that is the type of violent conduct that the legislature was seeking to kind of prevent here. And I don't think that that is violent conduct that requires police intervention.
Can you just clarify something? It's your view that the discussion of pushing was between the 12 and 14-year-old. I think respondent was arguing that it was between the older sister and NKD.
So Officer Lopez's testimony was that they received information that complainant was pushed as part of why they showed up to investigate. We don't have any testimony from ND that that happened, even though she testified at trial. NKD said on the body camera footage that his little sister pushed him. So that's really all we can tell from that. But if there are no more questions, I'd just like to conclude by asking this court to reverse the order finding NKD delinquent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you very much, both counsel, for your excellent submissions and argument today. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within 90 days.
You're going to make a very fine lawyer.